Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, monthly album roundup for the months of January and February 2024. I'm your host, Robert, and something music industry discourse something. And with me, I have...
Anybody got $400 to spare? I lost it, and I kind of need it back because of bullshit.
And...
Let's see, and our rumpy cat, Callan says, Dave's been out zest like so will everybody. Oh look, a big fat zero.
Yeah, so if it wasn't bad enough with all the Coyote versus Acme stuff, to all you kids who grew up on the internet in the 2000s, maybe even the 2010s, adios, Rooster Teeth.
Yeah, that's a damn shame. Doesn't like some inner mutuals amount who know people who you know been who got worked there or at least you know been at cons and shit, and I mean and of course like you know like this TV heard either good things mixed things all is all around, but damn man, all that after 2 decades just gone.
Venture capital being in charge of creative industries is poison. We need to axe the poison expeditiously.
Yeah.
Damn right.
So, seriously, someone grab David Zaslav by his stupid haircut and dangle him over the edge of a building.
Oh, we can only hope.
Until either he learns his lesson or his credit cards fall out. Whichever happens first.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're not here to discuss the failings of capitalism in relation to the Hollywood industry. We're here to discuss the failures of capitalism in relation to the music industry. Wait, that might actually be until... I think that's technically next episode. This is album roundup territory, although it might intersect at points. Because apparently fucking... God, what was his name? French Montana did some bullshit. Oh. Once again, you know, proving how the entire fucking stream trolling trend really needs to, like, go away. Or it might be going away, because apparently it didn't work out all that well for him anyways.
Nope, because people knew that nobody wants to do a version of an album that has 16 fucking boppers of an album.
Yeah, so this might be the beginning of the end. But, yeah, I mean, aside from that, we do have some actual roundup business here. And as always, since the first couple of months tends to be a take a bit to wind up, we're kind of folding all that into one roundup here. And yeah, then who knows, March will hopefully pick up a bit more.
Hopefully.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and start this off, as we always do, by running down what exactly came out in the past couple of months. Taking this week by week, there wasn't much to say for the week of January 5th because we didn't have an episode out that week, and so we're gonna move on to January 12th to start things off with. From the band Infant Island, we had their newest album Obsidian Wreath. From Greg Pucciato, we had a new EP called FC5N. The collaborative efforts of Boldy James and Nicholas Craven give us a new project, Penalty of Leadership. The Bruiser Brigade, specifically Bruiser Wolf, giving us his second album, My Story Got Stories. From Kid Cudi, we had a new album from him titled Insano. From Caliuchis, we had a Spanish language album, Orquideas. And from 21 Savage, we had that whole American Dream thing, which, as we came to learn, is not in fact a movie, it's just a promotional thing for that album. Don't we have egg on our face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then moving on to January 19th, from heavy metal veterans Saxon, we had their new project Hell, Fire, and Damnation. From the band Sleater Kinney, we had their new album Little Rope. From the band Neck Deep, their new self-titled album. Since it's an election year, that means we have to contend with the new Green Day project, Saviors. And one of the first not goods of the year, from Lil Dicky, we have the soundtrack to the Dave series titled Penith. Get it?
Robot chicken sketch. Yeah.
You dick.
Life slam your penis suffering. In the car door, why don't you?
That joke is a million times funnier than anything to come out of little Dickie's mouth. Anyway, then moving on to the week of January 26th, from what remains of Static X, we have Project Regeneration Volume 2. Then, of course, there was the Whitechapel live album, Live in the Valley. From Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes, we had Dark Rainbow. From Future Islands, we have People Who Aren't There Anymore. And from Benny the Butcher, there's the album Everybody Can't Go. Now, let's move on to February. Starting with February 2nd, we had whatever the latest album was from KMFDM called Let Go. Because, you know, they're still around doing things. From the band Meth, we had their second studio album, Shame. From Kieran J. Callanan, we have their new album, If I Could Sing. From Brittany Howard, there's the album What Now? And the band The Last Dinner Party dropping their much-anticipated debut, Prelude to Ecstasy. Then a little bit later on February 7th, there was the release of the soundtrack to a surreal comedy film called Dali, about the life and times of Salvador Dali. I bring this up because the soundtrack was apparently produced by Thomas Bangalter.
Oh.
Interesting. Okay. Kind of makes me want to watch that movie now. Then we go on to February 9th. From a band, starting off with a band I'm fairly certain Alex has talked about a handful of times here, The Pineapple Thief with It Leads to This. From the British punk band The Chisel, their second studio album, What a Fucking Nightmare. From singer-songwriter Chelsea Wolfe, her newest album, She Reaches Out to, She Reaches Out to, She. From Helado Negro, we have their new album, Phasor. From 5E04, a new project, Pain and Love 2. And, of course, the much-anticipated new album from Usher with Coming Home. Then, moving on to February 16th, from Eason, we have his brand new self-titled album. From the British punk band Idols, we have their new album, T-A-N-G-K de Tong. I still haven't figured out the pronunciation. From Chromeo, we have Adult Contemporary. From Yeet, we have their new album, 2093. From Laura Jane Grace, we have the album Hole in My Head. Jennifer Lopez with her new album, This Is Me Now. And from a professional content mill reaction farm, slash apparently also a singer, Jason Derulo, we have the album New King. Seriously, I have no idea how much that messed me up when watching that one Jax Films video. Fuck. Actually, maybe I shouldn't be surprised. A musician like Jason Derulo with no talent, of course he'd be the laziest tier of reactioner on, like, fucking TikTok. We live in hell world, people. And last but certainly not least, we have the week of February 23rd. We had the newest album from the metal band Darkest Hour with Perpetual / Terminal. From Job for a Cowboy, we had their first new album in a decade with Moon Healer. From Amaranth, we had their new album, The Catalyst. From the avant-garde band Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum, we had Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum of the Last Human Being. From French Montana, as we said, there was Mac and Cheese 5. From Kid Cudi again, we had the next part of the Insano project with Nitro Mega. From Lil Yachty, we had a new EP, I think it was, called Something Other. From Earth Gang, we had Robophobia, which was the latest installment of the whole Earth Gang versus the Algorithm project. And from MGMT, we had their newest album, Loss of Life. So, while it might not be the most saturated month or even 2 months, there certainly was an interesting spread of stuff to dive in and out of, so now is where we get to doing the actual diving of the in and out in the... I lost track of this metaphor. We gotta move on to something else. So, of course, as always, we throw it over to Alex to get the ball rolling.
Okay, and we shall with how I'm going to be going about all of this going forward, because as I mentioned many times before, I don't have a lot of what I would call spare time for a lot of things, music being one of them. I have a very limited amount of free time and a very limited focus because of that, so I can't get to everything, although I am making playlists for myself to keep track of stuff that I'm either going to listen to or did listen to in the month. I also have a leftovers playlist of stuff that I just didn't get around to or skipped out on, which leads me to making a bit of a rule for myself going forward. Nothing more than 14 tracks. In today's day and age, if your album is more than 14 tracks long, I don't know what you're doing, but it's too much. That goes to you, Usher. Your album is 20 tracks long. What the fuck? Same goes for you, Kid Cudi. I don't know, like, the inner minutia of this insano project, but releasing a 21-track album and then releasing an 18-track compendium, that is insanity. I mean, yeah, sure, a lot of the tracks are really short. That tells me it's more about quantity than quality, because I mean, just looking at this track list, I mean, you got features from Lil Yachty, ASAP Rocky, Travis Scott.
Ugh.
Just why? Just stop it, everybody. So that's my rule going forward. If you want an album to be listened to by me, keep it under 14 tracks. You know, unless you're a band I really like, because I will make some exceptions, because I'm a favoritist bitch like that. But I did get around to a couple of things here. I thought I was going to have 5 things on here. Apparently, if I miscounted, I have 6 things. But I'll get the bad one out of the way first.
Oh.
Okay. Green Day. Yeah, the Saviors album. On one hand, it's better than the last album, which means it's the best album since Revolution Radio, but, like, the bar is so insanely low, it's a by-default victory. That's all I can say about it. It's good. Why is this thing 15 tracks long? This is what made me institute my own rule going forward. This did not need to be 15 friggin' tracks long. And it's all just a bunch of Green Day, I'm glad that you're still around, you know, doing things, you know, 30 plus years later. You're now officially boomer-ass dad rock.
You're old now.
Yeah, all these tracks just feel like the same structure of verse, chorus, bridge, guitar solo, chorus, repeated 15 times over. And yeah, the modus operandi of this album is, well, living in the 2020s sure does suck, huh? Reference. Say whatever you want to about American Idiot. That album had focus. Granted, it was through a very loose concept, but still, there were motifs that sort of tied in a clear-cut focus. Here, there's, like, nothing here. And I tried, but all of this just went in one ear and out the other. Why are you making a 15-track album in 2024, guys? Just why?
I'm still trying to figure out why they're even here at all. Like, I feel like society has kind of progressed past the need for Green Day at this point. Plus, like, I'm trying to remember, how long ago was it that Billy Joe Armstrong starred in some comedy about being a rock star going through, like, a bizarro midlife crisis or something? Does anybody else remember that, or is it just me?
That seems like a movie that happened, like, a long time ago. Ordinary World? Is that what it is?
I remember.
I think so.
Yeah, that was in 2016.
Okay.
Wow. I don't know. So, like, you should be aware that, like, you're past your prime, and yet 8 years later, you're still here. Why?
We call that Chris Jericho syndrome.
Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give it credit. It's the best album since Rev Rad, but again, that's sort of by default. Like, whatever. Okay. On a better note, though, I did listen to this Greg Puciato EP, FC5N, apparently stands for Fuck Content 5 something. These are apparently bonus materials from the Fuck Content album he did back in 2020. It's a nice, aggressive blend of what I would call postish hardcore in some aspects, along with more of an stripped back approach on you know, some of the parts on the EP. I mean, it's a nice change of pace from what he's doing with Better Lovers. I can go with that. But back to more familiar territory for me. This Whitechapel live album is fantastic. I mean, it's just 13 tracks of Whitechapel live, and what can I say? This is from, you know, one of the more recent tours, you know, from the good albums that they did in the last couple years. Yes, I'm all about that. Oh, yes, and of course they did play This Is Exile and The Saw Is the Law, because you gotta give the people what they want.
Well, of course. I've, for context, I've seen Whitechapel live twice. Once was in high school, and the other was, I think it was the anniversary tour for the This Is Exile album, where they played it in its entirety. And I can't confirm, Whitechapel absolutely crushes live.
Fantastic. They need to come here one day. I'd like to see them live again. Or for the first time. My brain is a fucking mush of a mess right now. Ugh. I'm going to the beach in a month. I'm just trying to pass the time until then. Aren't we all? Okay. Next up here, something that I sort of got around here from my own little subsection of the internet. Rob, do you know of a band called Mean Streak?
Mean Streak?
Yeah.
Not familiar with them.
Okay, well, Mean Streak was a thrash metal band from the 1980s. An all-female thrash metal band from the 1980s that released one album. And sort of just went on their separate ways to live their lives. And they have come back, out of the blue, with a new EP, a 4-track EP, Blood Moon. This sounds like I'm pulling out a band that doesn't exist, but trust me, this is very real. Three of the members are very interesting people in the grand scheme of the metal scene. We have Lisa Martins Pace, Rena Sands, and Marlene Apuzzo, more commonly known as the wives of three members of Dream Theater, respectively, John Myung, John Petrucci, and Mike Portnoy.
Huh. I had a feeling this was going to tie back to something like that.
It always does. And naturally, this means, yes, they play bass, guitar, and not drums. They're a different drummer and different vocalist in the band. That's a, yeah. Music really does run in all their families in a very roundabout way, which is fun. This 4-track EP here, it's all right. I call it a blend of Heart crossed with Judas Priest. If that sounds like an interesting combination, maybe keep expectations down a little bit. It's very run-of-the-mill, meat and potatoes, you know, aggro thrash in a lot of ways. There isn't much I can really say other than just listen to the tracks in the playlist and you'll get a good example of what I'm referring to. No word on if it's going to lead to an actual full album, but hey, you know, it's something. I just wanted to throw that in here because I like throwing in these little weird albums that nobody knows about but me in these things, as I tend to do. And then there's this Eson album. I'm not sure I knew what symphonic black metal was, in a way, before this. This definitely sounds like, and I think I mentioned this, you know, once or twice when we were talking about the songs, something I'd hear from a John Carpenter movie score, but with a lot more black metal.
You know, it's funny that you mention it like that, because I went back to listen to some earlier Eson stuff, and his last album before this, Armor, had a ton of, like, that John Carpenter-style synth stuff on it.
Yeah, except here it's much more symphonic, in a very, very, very grand fashion. Again, it just feels like something out of a movie score, which is fun. It's very fun. Everything does kind of blend together, though, as you get deeper in the trackless thing. Though that could mean it's more composed like a film score, which has, you know, motifs and similarities all around. It's a fine listen either way. I enjoy the blending of the symphony and the black metal. I'm just rambling here. But there was one release I was looking forward to the most. Job for a Cowboy, Moon Healer.
Yes.
Oh, this is quintessentially my shit. Trademark, copyright. I call this, you got your prog metal in my deathcore. You got your deathcore in my prog metal. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Man, imagine that jingle with fucking blast beats.
I'm sure somebody will come up with that, but yeah. This is more my style of really heavy, frantic, aggressive music with more prog elements and lots of fantastic bass lines. You hear this, every other band out there? Make your bass actually audible and, you know, hire a bass player that can actually, you know, play bass. It goes a long way, trust me. A lot of this album does also, like the Eson album, does kind of sound the same, quote-unquote. I mean, if you hear one track on the album, you're going to basically get the gist of what the whole album is like. But from start to finish, this is just a fantastic return to form for these guys. 8 tracks, 40 minutes, all killer, no filler. This is what I like. It's in your face, it's aggressive, it's noodly, it's very, very, very intricate with all of the weird, wild, frantic instrumentation. This is what I like. So to all you bands out there, just make music that sounds like this, because this is what I like. So yeah, this is going to be a rotation for me for a while going forward. I keep going back to this album, you know, to hear some of the tracks, and it's just, it's so good. So good.
Here.
And I shall leave you with a couple albums I actually bought recently. I actually got a couple more albums from the vinyl collection of mine. Two more Cowboy Bebop soundtracks that came out on vinyl recently. Because, you know, of course, I gotta get that. And because I was out running errands the other day, I saw it on the shelf at Walmart and I had to pick it up. I finally own a vinyl copy of Master of Puppets. Yes, I missed the boat on the box set. I didn't have the money then. Oh well. But I got it. It's in the collection now. And I'm glad it's in there now because, like, yeah.
Hear, hear. Nice collection of albums, and now we move on to part two, which, as always, involves prodding the mind of the hybrid one.
Yeah, so this is sort of a new year. I did little things different. Like, Usually, whenever I do like the the best albums of whatever year this is, I usually write a written version of that and then do the audio version of that. Now I'm gonna do it well, like this as in the roundup, meaning like I'm gonna do a written version of what I've been listening to this those months putting my blog form, but then do it here. Although I will say, like forum reviews, I'm still doing that on Sure Resolution. By the way, just so you know, just clear things up. In other words, let's say next month I'm doing the Scuba Q album. That review will be on the regular site if I do the roundup thing in written form. I'll just say here's a link to that. Just go to there. Okay then. Now we're talking about enough my months. I have six, same as Alex. Still talking about. And guess what? They're all hip hop.
Nice.
Yeah, I will say this. No, I'm not calling Little Dicky. No, I'm not calling Fresh Montana. And also you guess, well, man, did y'all miss that? No, we didn't. We don't care. No, we don't. No, nobody.
There's a reason I left it off the calendar list.
Yeah, and we're not saying the names either. So yeah, we'll leave it in mystery, but you already know it anyway. So first, talk about Nicholas Craven and Bodie James put on the leadership. So about a year ago, or maybe a year, 13, 14 months ago, Bodie James comes to a car accident, and of course, he recovered. He's doing well now. It's even the album cover that, yeah, he had been an accident. He's doing well, and, well, that kind of maybe fucked up his 2013 sound. Like, well, he didn't put out much that year, maybe around, I want to say, two projects. He did a bunch of features, but I guess he slowed down after that or something, I don't know. But he has, but I think while he was maybe incapacitated or in his way, he teamed up with Nicholas Craven again to do another collab out, another album of his following Fresh Easter Robbery back in 2022, and as you remember, I like that album, and I'm just gonna say it's a part of that album. Meaning, yeah, I liked it. It was pretty good. I mean, look, I'm not gonna explain the concept of it because it was a Bodie James project. Sounds like it's gonna be Life Around Detroit, drug games, your storytelling shit going on, and this low flow delivery, which again, I still like that shit. I mean, some people might be tired of that from time to time. I mean, I have to, but it's been like, man, it's fine. But this one is still good. This one is good. I fuck with this project heavy. Again, it's about the same as I fuck with the last era between these two. Like the tracks that it's a lean list with 11 tracks, 13 minutes. It's all gravy. Like I know the singles like Brandon Chanel kicks. That happened. Open Attendant, which really good track. Really good track. I like Jack Frost, my favorite track in the album, because I like that it doesn't just go about the way he flows on it, the way the sample does, the way the sample was on there, the sound vocals doing this thing, which I kind of like that shit. I was really fun. I was really getting into it. Like, yeah, like in the course of Bodie James, he wants to show shows, all legs. Although he has one feature on a song. A song featuring the artist's name, and no joke, the feature's name is Double D. although it's spelled with D-E-E, but
does he have that sock cap?
that's what I was thinking too. But yeah. The project is something that is like it's still a project from these two. Like I said, a year is young. This might end up being maybe top 20, perhaps. I mean, I mean, talking about ass, but if someone's having it, like, I don't know if Bodhi gonna do his thing at least four stuff, most likely, cause he usually does that, doing like practice with, you know, with him and one producer on the mic, you're in an old thing, but like I said, he is still young, so we'll wait to see what happens next. Next up, we have Bruiser Wolf. My story's got stories. So, as you remember from about, I want to say 2-3 years ago, I put his album, Dope Gangster, on my best albums list of 2021. And, of course, I'm hearing from him, you know, here and there, also appearing on Danny Brown's last album, Quinta, yeah. I think I kind of knew he had an album coming out, considering he cast out on a Danny Brown show, I think some episodes back. And, so check this out. And, okay, I will say, it's slightly less funny than his previous one, at least in terms of sound. It's still a bit, it sounds still a bit weirder, and, that's on Mouthpiece, so that I don't go with that. Like, I said the beats are doper here, even though we boost him as a rapper, which he's very interesting, it's like how he raps, like, he got this tone that's this very 30s cartoon gangster type of stuff, where Sick Boy's like, hey, shit, like, something like that, like, he has this, I want to say this is a very funny voice that sounds like, I don't know, he should be in a game of Cuphead or something like that. But yeah, storytelling is basically, the story's about, basically his childhood, his dealing with dope on his heyday. He does good on hooks here, and it kind of be kind of catchy. His voice, it kind of works, like, cause he got a lot of charisma in there. Like, he's like a slightly goofier West Side Gun, kind of. And of course, the featuring kind of, you got like tracks like Too Bad with Zulus and Danny Brown on there. You have, apparently it's a feature from a name I heard in a while, Trinidad James.
I didn't even know. I didn't know he was still making music. Holy shit!
But I will say, like, okay, but usually, like, when I listen to my first album, I'm like, okay, I got the feeling now. It's like that. You know, with second albums, it's like the feeling might be different than the last one, but if I maybe get more listens to it, I might, you know, it might be better. But it might be a smaller project. But yeah. I say this project is, very solid. Like, Bruiser Wolf still continues to be an interesting rapper. That's still, ever. And more about Bruiser Brigade. More about Bruiser Brigade. Considering Danny Brown is saying, I'm just shit on my label. So, yeah. Which, look forward to hearing that shit too. But, yeah. But, like I said, it's all good for here. Right, next up we got Bane the Butcher. Everybody Can Go. We got old Bane the Butcher, and he made his Def Jam debut. And it seems like things are going like his way. You got production handled by the Alchemist and Hit-Boy. Got features from, Stoke Out Cooks, Marty Caesar. And of course, you got Westside and Conway doing the 3-man team up thing on a track. It's going to be a good one. It's a good one. It ain't a great one. I'll say it don't really offer that much replay value to me. I think his previous stuff got more replay than this. And when I say that, you're thinking, oh, he's had a Def Jam. It must be the label's fault. Not really. I'm not gonna say that. I mean, it does feel like that in some usual other projects that he's been doing. Like the content for usual Benny, Rich Rappin'. He got some sloppy in some parts. I like the track "Everybody Can Go," the title track. I didn't really like that. I couldn't fuck with that. Especially the last few balls in there were just kind of like really, really, really like I'm gonna say really like you truly said that shit, but man, we'll say production on here, which yeah, both Hit-Boy and Alchemist did this thing, but I think it was 60-40 because I think Hit-Boy does more here than Alchemist, and while Hit-Boy's supposed to be good, like happened to listen to his project with Benny Burn the Proof. He has that, you know, the cleaner, slicker style. Alchemist has this sort of grimy, menacing sound. I mean, like Hit Boy is good, but I did prefer more Alchemist stuff. Like the tracks I like are mostly Alchemist produced, like Dramatic Graduation, TMBTL, Buffalo Kitchen Club, and Griselda Express. That's the track with him, Westside, and Conway doing that thing. And although we'll say some tracks like Back Again with Snoop Dogg and Pillow Talk and Slander, both Hit-Boy tracks are pretty good. I mean, the one after the track I didn't like was Big Dog after the one with Lil Wayne on the guest feature, which, y'all, come on, man. Y'all just start hyping Lil Wayne up because he's very mid at best. And I'm being nice. Imagine what they gonna say about that. Imagine what Rob said about him. Like I said, I'm
yeah,
nice.
I was thinking like that. Lil Wayne's another artist in the same vein of Granddad. Like, why the fuck are you still here?
Yeah. Like I said, Big Dog, which it's made at best. It's like it's not good, but not wholly terrible. But a few parts here were not it. Braun was cool, I guess. All right, I guess. I mean, the closing track, Big Timers, was kind of meh. Which, yeah, like, I can't, like I'm not going to be like the whole, oh, the label did this shit. Like, no. I don't think it's the label's falling like that. I just feel like even when he was still on his indie shit, some part has been kind of meh. Rapping is still good with some sluggish parts from the beat selection is, you know, it's very familiar of what I know, what I know. Like, again, this product is, okay, it's good, but not great. That's what I got from them. Next up, and this one, you probably wondering, you in this one? Yeah. 21 Savage, American Dream. So, as you know, my history with 21 Savage, at first, I was like, and this dude's not it. Further as time gone along, it's like, he's not that bad. He's not somebody I need to go check out. It's like, okay. It's like, I can stomach a few songs of it. Like, I pick something that I like, but yeah. And of course, now I got his album, American Dream, which, you know, given his situation with what happened to him around 2019, and if the album cover got, you know, basically his picture as a kid, which got his name, his surname, the name, his given name, like you fucking see it on there, like, yeah. And of course, you all thought there'll be a movie about it, like, that's gonna be some, or just a parody. He even on Club Shay Shay, you know, the go-to premiere, the premiere spot to spill some tea, at least for the first 2 months. Anyway, the album, like I said, he's grown on me, and the album, they bring the okay to good, never great, but yeah, like, and I know it's like his third album, you know, and okay, I'll say this, but Dutchie kind of helps him out here, because he has a lot of soul samples that sort of great, like, you know, sample that sounds heavenly, that sounds like, oh, this is some good soul shit right there, then, which, you know, the chance they got some trap production, which, of course, is like, okay, that's fine, like, All of Me and Red Rum both got some amazing sound, not to make it sound like, especially Red Rum, if people mean that shit, people mean the opening, mean that sample, but yeah, you got, talking about his, you know, remember visit the past that made him this and apparently be what I am today, basically that shit. I will say some lines kind of stupid, like this line from Popular Shit, which go like, "You smell like gas, I think somebody pooped." Which, okay. You fucking uh-huh. Fives. Okay, and then there's NHLE, which got some of a something like something of a wine guitar. I want a something of a wine guitar like this. That have someone's made that. Also, this refers that, yeah, I'm not a Doja Cat fan. Hell, like her.
I don't think any of us are.
Hell, like her album is her saying ad-lib. I figured I thought that'd be funny, but it's kind of not. Let's hear ad-lib. Something that should be funny to me, but it's kind of not. Like, eh. Of course, you gotta look at my brother, which about the whole YSL trial thing that went down, which he's a young thug, you know, what's he going through? And of course, condemning Gunner for being a snitch or witness all that shit. Like, you know, basically everybody turned up. Everybody said they're gonna, you know, fuck you, basically. And the most interesting song on here that I got most interesting is one called Nana, because the sample comes from a song from Malcolm McLaren about her. As a song, that's a mashup of St. Louis Blues by Bessie Smith and She's Not There by the Zombies. I noticed the sample immediately because that song I heard on Kill Bill Volume 2. You know, it's going, "No, no one told me about her." Even the man, yeah, that song. In case that memory came back. I mean, but that was fine. Metro Boomin did this thing in production, and I will say this: Travis Scott was not bound here. I mean, a lot better here than most of Utopia. Like the everything else about the songs are, you know, they're. Okay, you should have worn your bonnet, Brent Fias with height, I guess. But it's got a Mickey Echo and Tommy Newport. Okay, those are interesting too. Like, again, I am very, very okay with this album. Like, to be fair, I didn't really go on high about this band. It was fine. I mean, I got something to go back to, but that's about it. So here's one album that that came as a big surprise. You know, we talked about that music collective, 1999, Write the Future.
Yeah, we did mention one of their songs a while back.
Yeah, they had an album out now. The album, the title is called Hella, but the thing is, You type in the album, it says Hella, but there's like a, I want to say emoji face, but more like it makes the emoji thing, whatever the hell, I don't know. It's sort of like what you see out of a Fox's album, but not really.
Oh, I just Googled it. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
And I guess that expense to the track list, too.
Yeah, this is a long ass album. This was on the Alex. Yeah, I'm not fucking this shit rule. It's like 24 tracks.
Oh no.
Yeah. Okay. And okay. And of course, the tracks are spelled kind of like, you know, well, almost like the whole sponsor thing. Almost like, you know, I feel like you can't do that, like. No, that shit, like, you know.
Yeah, I get you.
So anyway, about the album itself. I do feel like, you know, since my 88 Rising, I do feel like it used to be one of those coverage albums called Hand in the Clouds. I've been talking about that once in a while, at least a few years back. It's kind of feel like the same kind of, I mean, mean, like, I mean, you have, you know, you have like artists, like, you know, there are artists like Rich Brian, Born Hugh doing some things. Well, basically, you know, as a whole. And of course, you got a lot of guest features from people like Ghostface Killah, Rick Ross, Sosa Misha, Busta Rhymes, Amare, of course, the track with Red Dress, and of course the one I like, the one I like the most, which is no, which is obvious, the one with Batman on Good West, Gun and Conway. And of course, you got some people like De La Soul, Dan the Automator, Dale the Homo Sapien, and yeah, and there's like a bunch of other tracks. I mean, I will say that, I mean, the project is decent. It's too damn long. And I'm like, I kind of got the length of the album, but I know it's hella long. Not long, but some of the tracks in here, which I kind of like all the tracks that feature you know, Ghostface, Rick Ross, Chris Rock, Rich Brown, do good thing. One dimension, like on Light Rails, which I remember that track was produced by Red Veil. Remember him?
Yeah, which he was a guest on Scaring the Hoes.
Yeah, which the beat on Light Rails sounds nice. It sounds like it's very light, but yeah. Yeah, I will say this clip, like, I say this, like, if you listen to, like, again, if you follow a lot of 88 Rice and stuff, and you will see a bit of familiarity with that, especially if you listen to one of their compilation albums. This is Soda Edge, just now disguised as Nine, the future, like I said, the track that you could have, I don't know, split this into two albums or at least. I don't know, do some A-shit and do the B-side shit, whatever. Because you have a lot of these interludes or not skits, but more shorter songs or basically some shit like that. But yeah, I'll say that. Again, this is worth a listen. Probably not for the whole album, It's interesting to listen. Like the tracks like Spiky Boys, Light Rails, Cough Drops, Ball in the Tooth, and Mint Chocolate. They're good to me. And last but not least, now technically this album that was technically it's 2023 album, but it was released on December 29th, 2023. So technically this falls in 2024 because one, no one knows how to cover it. And this is a unreleased album from 2016. So this is based on the dimension of the shelf, kind of, but not album form. And look at the clock. After use double clocks. It's Griselda and Alchemist O'Clock.
Huh.
Yeah, this is the lost project of West Side Gun and the Condom Machine and the Alchemist, titled Harlem Nash 2, the original version.
Interesting.
Yeah, and since the names of it, West Side of Conway, the dual name is, you know, Harlem Nash, which of course, in case you're new to this, the big wrestling fans. I think everybody here just, well, they do that.
Honestly, already. I'm surprised. I never would have guessed. Sarcasm.
Yeah. And of course, this project, they had it done, but at the time of 2016, they were kind of shady, so this had to be shelved. And of course, as you know, well, they're not shady anymore. They're back doing their own thing, especially Conway was on label. And they figured we'll be a good time to release it in the public. And even though it's basically songs I heard before, just on this album, they weren't on the official album, they were just loosely here and there. or at least scatter everywhere else. Like, yeah, there's tracks I've previewed her before, like the one track Fork in the Pot, Schoolboy Q, considering like there's a great music video to that, or at least a weird ass music video to that, which I still kind of like, which that's my favorite Jones now on that tape. Quick got some tracks there, so like you got tracks that like 94 Ghost Shit, which I talked about before on the, well, on the on episode, Judas, Rey Mysterio, like, you're basically better that, you know, if you're somebody that, you know, that likes to consider sound, but not feel as much ever since after the whole Shady thing, or what they do the whole thing, if you're missing that sound, then yeah, like, granted they are working on a dual version with the other number producer, Derringer, but 50% is pretty solid. Like, they got tracks like Pete vs. Andre, that's paid homage to Andre the Giant, and I want to say his name right, Peter Malvia. I hope I said that shit right. And of course, some tracks that were featured on the EPs, like I said, like tracks like Raven Studio and Judas. They were featured on the Alchemist EP's Bread and Lunch Meat, which, okay, there's a lot of recycling going on, I guess. They can't release the album, I guess they say, you know, here's some decent pieces of that one. It's weird. Even something from this year, until they drop something, Conway doing something, jumping soon. Westside, I don't know, he said he might still do mixtapes like EP's, because say something to the albums. It's worth a listen. I say it's worth a listen. Like, if you want some, you know, that early Griselda shit that got you hooked with him in the first place. And that is it. And I need a drink.
All right.
With this Baja Blast I got from Ralph's fridge.
Aw, man. And I finally found some at the Walmart, too. Oh, well, guess I'm going to have to start living in their freezers. But with that out of the way, now it's time for me to wrap things up with this last third here. So I'm going to keep things... I was trying to streamline things a bit more in the last year that we were doing this, and I think I'm going to stick to that here. Like, try to keep things, again, relatively streamlined, regardless of what tier we're talking about here. So... I still have my structure of top picks, sort of middle of the roads, and then the any lowlights. So let's start with my top picks for the past month. First one here being Obsidian Wreath, the newest album from this band called Infant Island. I will say straight up, the main reason I checked this out is because I saw a review from Spectrum Pulse that seemed to speak quite highly of them, and it sounded like something I could be into. This is their... Well, depending on how you look at it, either their third or fourth album, based on how you count it, because I know one of their prior releases was apparently marketed as a mini album, but I could be splitting hairs on this. So, the style here mainly blends a lot of aspects of, like, screamo music with more extreme metal and shoegaze elements, and that combination hits right away as soon as you hit play with the album opener Another Cycle. You get a lot of those distorted guitars that belt out a mix of, like, you know, very aggressive riffs and these deeply somber, like, you know, real sad boy chord progressions, the mix saturating with all the rest of the instrumentation as well, from... the drums kind of, you know, playing these, like, very aggressive grooves and having later, like, you know, blast beats and such, to the very harsh, gnarly quality of the vocals. Swapping back and forth between those metal passages with a lot of those more melancholic passages that leave you, you know, like, staring up at the ceiling, thinking about life and shit. Especially love the way the guitars manage to, like, keep that balance. Like, there's always a constant kind of, like, you know, effect or distortion on it, but it usually manages to, like, keep things really, like, well balanced between the heavier parts and these, like, walls of distortion or these more light, serene melodies and tones. Really conveying a lot of this, like, intense agony and strife, where you just feel the emotions at the heart of this album from beginning to end, even if you're like me and you don't understand a damn thing that's really being said. But yeah, this is a really strong release right off the gate, and I hope to follow this band in the future and see what more they put out. My next top pick here, first time listening to this artist, even though I know they've been brought up a few times on the podcast, Bruiser Wolf's My Story Got Stories. Like, I know his debut dropped a few years ago, but I never got around to it, and, but here I am making up for lost time, so my initial impression of the guy... Honestly, this dude is fucking hilarious. Like, I rotated this album a lot because of, like, how intentionally ridiculous a lot of it is, and I kind of love it for that. Like, his tone of voice, the first thing I said to myself when I was listening is, like, this guy would be a really great character in, like, an episode of the Boondocks that we never got to see. or they, like, they should let him host, like, a radio station in, like, a Grand Theft Auto game. Like, give us Bruiser Radio for GTA 6.
I second that idea.
Goddamn right. Although, thinking about it further, like, when I was re-listening to the album earlier, I noticed that he's kind of got, like, this loose spoken word flow to him. It almost kind of sounded like someone doing an impression of William Shatner. Like, you know that cadence? It's kind of like that. Which just makes it really funny when he's rapping lyrics like, I don't take my shoes off, I fuck them in my Vans like Bang Bros, or don't think with your dick, son, she a church girl, I know she a thick one. In church watching porn with the volume low. I mean, hey, the entire reason of being in church is to forgive sin, so, hey, send it up in there. So, the album's got a lot of, like, really catchy solid beats to it, like, you're just hanging out with a really cool pimp, and the choruses here are ridiculously catchy. Like, I find myself humming them constantly, which kind of makes it really hard to maintain my cool sometimes, because, like, sure, you have catchy lyrics like, holla at your mans, or this is for the G's, this is for the hustlers, but I gotta tell you, I gotta be really careful, because, if I'm not, then I could just be, like, sitting there at work trying to do something, and then I'm just like, okay, I gotta do this, gotta do this, two bad bitches sucking dick at the same time. that is too funny, just the way he says it. The only thing I would say I dislike about the record, and I don't know if this is a thing across, like, all, like, Bruiser Brigade related releases, but every track has, like, what I assume is, like, the Bruiser Brigade tag, so to speak, which is twofold. One, it's that loud voice that's like, Bruiser Brigade. And then there's what I'm pretty sure is the low health sound effect from The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. You know, that, like, beeping sound effect where you're down, like, your last couple of hearts. Like, that comes up in every song, and I will admit it did kind of wear on my patience a bit. But otherwise, yeah, this Bruiser Wolf dude's a goddamn riot. And if it's true that this is apparently the slightly lesser album of the two he's got so far, then I gotta check out that first one stat. Alright, now, moving on to the next one here. This one comes from the Yellow Flannel catalog of 2024, that being The Chisel, a hardcore punk band from London who dropped their debut album in 2022, and are back with their second studio album, What a Fucking Nightmare. And I feel like that album title alone tells you a lot of what you need to know. Like, I'm not sure I need to explain much, because this is just a really good hardcore punk record. Like, everything you want out of a great album in that genre is here, and done incredibly well. The chords and riffs are very aggressive, obnoxious, and in your face. Same with the drums, which are very pounding and aggressive and really reinforce the energy and the rhythms of everything. And of course, the vocals are very, like, throaty and shouty and caked in a lot of, like, cockney aggro attitude, while belting out lyrics about dealing with fake polite assholes, chewing out authority figures, living life on your own terms. And then there's a track, Fuck 'Em, where the chorus is literally just like, fuck 'em, fuck 'em, fuck 'em, fuck 'em, like, over and over again. And then, of course, you throw in a lot of, like, the gang shout backing vocals, which is pretty typical to, like, a lot of British street punk, the Oi movement, and all that kind of stuff. And you have a pretty essential banger of a punk record that is not to be missed. I would say, like, if your favorite of, like, the quote-unquote classic punk bands was The Clash, then this is very much like a kind of modern successor to that style of punk, and you'll find a lot to like here. Honestly, I wonder if that's kind of, like, why they chose a name that, like, started with C, like, The Clash, The Chisel, eh. And now for the last of my super top picks here. Probably one of the most anticipated comebacks we've had in a while. Of course, the MySpace deathcore phenom's Job for a Cowboy with Moon Healer. For those who need a quick catch-up, when the band started releasing full albums and projects right around that time, they sort of grew out of the initial deathcore style to more of a traditional death metal style. And then on 2014's Sun Eater, that's when they started to get more progressive with their style. And it kind of felt like there was a split reception at the time. I remember this very distinctly because, like, there were some solid reviews, but there was also a lot of ambivalence. And that kind of reflected in the album sales because, like, okay, I realize the commercial appeal of music like this is very limited, but their previous album to this sold, like, 10,000 copies in its first week. And this album's first week sales was only, like, 4,000. And combine that with the fact that they didn't even tour behind Sun Eater. Hell, if you want further context, the last tour that they went on, like, before this big period of absence was Mayhem Festival 2013. God, do you guys remember Mayhem Fest? Bro, like, that was a thing.
I believe, let me see if I can put this put number in right, because I think they came here to Charlotte one year. I don't know if it was, I think it was 2011. It was one of those years, but yeah, that was certainly quite a long time ago.
Yeah, so no tour, an album that sold, well, okay, it's not great sales, but you know what, at the very least, it's better than however much Trapped is selling. But after various sporadic signs of activity in the intervening years, they're of course back, and they really haven't skipped a beat at all. Like, I'm not surprised listening to it that, like, the album title Moon Healer is kind of like a perfect, like, kind of flip counterpoint to, like, Sun Eater, because this very much is, like, picking off from that particular point. Like, the band's technical acumen is still extremely on point, from a lot of the riffs and the guitar interplay to the various, like, drum patterns and extremely intricate rhythms and such. They still know how to flash their stuff while, like, simultaneously pummeling the listener into submission like no one's business. In fact, a lot of the more, like, straight-up metal parts here kind of had a strong vibe of, like, Black Dahlia Murder. So, like, they got that going for them, too. Don't forget about the sick bass lines, the aggressive vocals, a lot of the progressive melodies and tangents. And, yeah, it's pretty much, like, they have not, it really sounds like they haven't skipped a day. And I haven't looked at, like, any sales data for this one. I don't know if there's any available yet, but, like, for their sake, I hope it does well. Like, they really fucking deserve it if they're still pumping out great shit like this.
Yeah. I was actually thinking of a different tour. I was thinking of Mayhem Festival. I was thinking of Summer Slaughter 2012, which they were part of that tour with Periphery, Goat Whore, Veil of Maya, Exhumed, The Faceless, Cannibal Corpse, and Full Darkness Between the Buried and Me. Wow, I missed the boat on so many things back then.
Oh, God, yeah, I think that's, like, the only Summer Slaughter show I ever went to. It was either that or the one the year after.
We're all getting old around here.
No, yeah, it was 2012, because I do remember that was the first time I ever saw Periphery live. Right around P2, this time it's personal. Good stuff. So that does it for a lot of the topics. So now for some of the quick round stuff. So, let's start with the band Meth. Their debut album came out in 2019, so pre-pandemic. And now, 2024, we have their newest album, Shame. It definitely picks up where that one left off as well, delivering a collection of songs that have a lot of frantic, noisy, guitar chords and feedback, lots of crazy rhythms and the drums and such, and just this kind of like altogether mix of like noise, chaotic noise, and like doom that kind of like permeates from track to track, just this real menacing sense of anxiety. Very good stuff, but obviously it's a very acquired taste. This new Chelsea Wolfe album, She Reaches Out To, she's been on a bit of a folk kick with her last couple albums, but like this one chooses to go in more of a moody gothic industrial territory. Like think Nine Inch Nails, Depeche Mode type material. It works pretty well for her, in my opinion. The new Eson, self-titled. I was a bit hesitant on some of the singles at first, because I was like, I mean, they sound alright, but I feel like they could do a better job blending a lot of the symphonic aspects with the metal. But listening to the album in full, honestly, I should just learn to keep my mouth shut, because it does work pretty damn well. I still think Armor might be a little bit better, in my opinion, but this, honestly, works out pretty well. I might have to... For context, I listened to the, let's call it the main version. I haven't listened to the fully orchestral set yet, but I feel like I should at some point. And last but certainly not least, this new Idols album, Tonk. It's their fifth album overall, and while they're working with Kenny Beats again like they did on their last album, this one also mainly features the production work of Nigel Godrich, who's gotten around, you know, here and there, but he's probably best known for his various production credits with the band Radiohead. And, look, I'm not sure, like, it tries to go for a bit of a milder sound, while there is kind of the occasional more bold punk songwriting in tow, but, like, I feel like that spark that made those first couple of albums from them really, like, special pieces of UK punk just kind of feels like it's just not there. I mean, maybe they can pull it back at some point, but for now, I'm just kind of feeling like the more mellow approach just isn't working in their favor. Hence why I spent so much time listening to, you know, The Chisel. But that pretty much about does it. I don't really have any super lowlights per se, so... yeah, thank you for listening. If you thought any of this was interesting and want to hear more, we'll have a playlist in the description with our choices, you know, the albums we talked up and we thought were interesting. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SurrealRezzo, like us on Facebook, visit the website SurrealResolution.com for our written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, all that good business. And be sure to jump into our Discord, as that's the best place to be immediately notified whenever new episodes of the podcast go up. And remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. That's probably like the one of the best I can think of to you know, keep up with new episodes in audio-only form. So that'll about do it for this roundup. We'll, of course, be back next month with the roundup for March. So until then, peace.